Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Android Faithful, your weekly source for the latest news, the latest hardware, the latest apps, and, you know, the latest feedback, because that's in there, too, in the world of Android. I am one of your hosts, Jason Howell.
And I am the other host, Ron Richards, and we've got another host, too.
Michelle Rahman.
Hey, yes. How you doing, Michelle?
Good. Good to be back another week.
Yes. We also have another host, but she's not here.
No, Wynn is still on vacation.
Enjoying her sweet time in Tokyo, we assume Tokyo, somewhere in Japan.
In the Japans, as they say on Shogun that I've been watching. I've been watching the Shogun series on FX, which has been really good, but they keep referring to as the Japans. But we got a great, great guest, right, Jason?
Indeed. One of my all-time favorites. I would say Hall of Famer, really.
Oh,
J.R. Raphael of The Intelligence. Hello. JR, good to see you, man.
Good to see all you. How's everybody?
Well,
doing good.
All right.
It's funny because last week we had Juan Bagnell on, and that was the first time he was with you, Jason, in a very long time. And JR, Jason, I think this is the first time you guys have been together in a very long time.
It's been a while, you know?
It's been a while. It feels like home. This is just, it's cozy. It's everyone's here. Well, almost everybody, but familiar faces are here. It's
yes, nice. Indeed. Yeah. It's really great to have you here.
Thanks. Thank you for helping. Likewise, it's good to be here.
How have things been going over at the Intelligence?
They have been good, very busy, but good. So yeah, we launched the whole new brand. So, you know, I've had Android Intelligence forever. Now it's the Intelligence. We've got a Windows Intelligence. So it was a lot. It was a lot to get through. Like we did a whole like rebranding, new website. And I feel like we're just digging out of that hole of like fixing all the little glitches and things that have come up, but I think we're there almost like 99% of the way. It only took 6 months to clean up all that.
Well, and so last time we had you on in the winter, you were on with a fantastic offer for our Android Faithful folks to get into the Intelligence. And at the same time, we had an offer for our patrons on Patreon to get access to the Intelligence and for people at the Intelligence to get access to the Android Faithful. And it works so well, we're going to do it again, right?
Yeah, oops, we did it again. Look at us.
So everyone who is an active member of the Android Faithful Patreon, you want to check Patreon after the show. We're going to post it after the show tonight. JR, what will people get if they are a Android Faithful patron over at the Intelligence?
The bigger question is, what won't they get? I mean, honestly, it's like we've got to start there. I'll back up a little. So not to assume that everybody knows who the hell I am. I write a weekly newsletter called Android Intelligence. I've been writing it in some form since, I don't know, the early 1920s, give or take. It gives you three things to know, three things to try in your inbox every Friday. Bunch of insights, tips, advice, cool stuff you don't see anywhere else. So if you aren't already subscribed, that part's free. It's a great place to start. You can just go to theintelligence.com or theintelligence.com/Android if you prefer to sign up. But then for the true Android fanatics among us, the Android faithful, what I even say, I guess, the Intelligence Insiders, kind of like our inner circle, our little exclusive club, is just 7,000, roughly 7,000 times more than what you get in the newsletter or anything else. I hate to oversell it, but I don't think I am. There's really nothing else out there like it. I'm personally a fan of it, even though I also do run it. So as an insider, you get, there's a whole bunch of stuff. You get an upgraded version of all the newsletters, ad-free access to the newsletters themselves and everything on the Intelligence website. Tons of on-demand resources that just teach all sorts of useful stuff, in-depth super guides about advanced Android and Googly subjects, searchable database of every single tip I've ever shared in the newsletter going way back many years. And then there's our really incredible community, super smart, funny Android fans, always around, eager to interact, help with questions, advice, troubleshooting. I'm very much a part of that crowd myself, of course. And you also get free or discounted access to a whole bunch of my favorite premium apps and services, like $200 worth of stuff, a lot of it like Android or Google connected. So, yeah, as far as the Patreon subscribers, the Patreon supporters specifically, they'll be getting a coupon code for 50% off, half off, if they would like to join us on the insider part. And, you know, the whole thing kind of works because it's so personal and intimate and interactive, so we only open the gates to new members a few times a year. So they're open now through this coming weekend. Yep. If you're an Android Faithful supporter, like Ron said, you'll get that coupon code for 50% off soon. And total spur of the moment thing, but we've also whipped up a special coupon code for the Faithful Android Faithful listeners. Even if you're not a supporter of Android Faithful yet, you can get $25 off your first year as an Intelligence Insider if you're so inclined and if you sign up this next week. And I have a very special coupon code to share for that I'm very proud of. This was my big accomplishment of the day. So all the coupon code is I love Ron Richards.
Oh my God.
Is actually it. That will work. Just all one word. So you'll go to theintelligence.com/insider, sign up, when you'll see the little thing to put in a coupon code, I love Ron Richards, and it'll knock $25 off any membership you want. And again, if you're already an Android Faithful supporter, stay tuned because you'll get that extra special 50% off discount. But yeah, either way, hope to see everyone there. It's a big happy family, a big party, and it'd be awesome to have more of the Android Faithful among us, by all means.
And I would like to make it clear that I was not aware that was the coupon code until it came out of JR's mouth just now. So he totally forced me to do it.
No, Ron was like, look, if you're going to do this, it's got to be I love Ron Richards. I was like, really?
Sign the dotted line.
It was a deal point. It was that along with the green M&Ms in the bowl. That's the only way that I'll show up. Yeah, no.
He made me get the shirt. He said, you got to wear the shirt. You got to use my name in the code. But yeah, I go along with it. It's all good.
Oh, man, JR. Well played, JR. Well played. But yeah, no, we love our Android Faithful, the Intelligence, you know, kind of connection. And I know that we got a bunch of folks from the Intelligence over on the Android Faithful Patreon who we love. And then, you know, a bunch of folks from our side, you know, from the patrons went over in the last wave. So if you missed that last time, now's your chance to get on board. So regular listeners, you know, non-Patreon users, use the coupon code I love Ron Richards. You get $25 off. And those of you who are in the Android Faithful Patreon, keep an eye out for Patreon, and we'll post the coupon code to get 50% off only for patrons. That's the only way you can get it, and that will run until this Sunday, April 7th. So, very cool. Awesome. That's too funny. Oh, JR.
Everybody is Android Faithful. They're also Ron Faithful, apparently, if they use that coupon code.
One day he's going to rebrand the show. It's going to be the Ron Faithful. I'm calling it right now. You got to watch out for that.
Oh, Lord. All right. Well, shall we talk about some Android stuff?
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right, cool. All right. So first up, Google shared some new features across its umbrella of services around the world under the guise, not the guise, but under the theme of 6 ways to travel smarter this summer. Everyone's got their eye on vacation. Vacation is all I ever wanted. And so Google's here to help you. So first and foremost, they've got some new shopping tools. They got the whole Tinder swipe thing going on with recommendations where you can thumb up and thumb down and skip things while shopping, which everybody loves to swipe left or right. You can specify your favorite brands to see more of them within the shopping experience. And of course, get ready to, you know, the drinking game. You can use generative AI to create a style you want and then find similar styles to what you created.
This is really kind of crazy.
Like, really, everyone's a fashion designer inside their bodies. So.
Colorful metallic puffer jacket. Yeah, something like that. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we've got those. It's this Fractals puffer jacket out there that's sort of like what you just generated. That's
pretty cool. That's neat. They've also got a virtual try-on using the quote-unquote try-on icon on shopping sites to let you see what the product looks like on people, which is always weird. So that gets your shopping done before the summer starts. And then on the map side of the world, they've got a list of recommendations from people who know a city really well. They've got the whole local guides and everything going on there. They're really using that curation stuff. You can actually create your own list to share with others if you like to. And of course, AI will populate things that are important to know about a particular place. And finally, they're adding in translations in Circle to Search, which is coming in a few weeks. So translations in Circle to Search, which is pretty cool. So yeah, so JR, is that enough AI for your from Google for you for this month, or how do you feel about that?
It's a lot of AI. I'm still a little skeptical about the practical real world usage of a lot of the, especially the generative AI stuff. But there's some neat stuff here. This is cool. I like Circle to Search a lot, and that part in particular excites me. The one thing that I really think when these kind of big drops come is this would be like 40% of a new iOS release would be this kind of stuff. And we just see it. It kind of comes out. You don't even think about it. And it kind of gets glossed over because of the way Google does it, which, you know, in the long run is probably better for us as users. But it's interesting to think if Apple had all this stuff as part of the next iOS release, people would be applauding and going on and on about it. And we're just like, yeah, it's a blog. We read the Google blog. Okay, cool. We'll watch for it. So I think this is cool. I enjoy these kind of little Google app feature updates, and much as I enjoy a new Android version, I know we'll get to that soon too, I kind of look forward to these little drops more. There's always so much just fun little neat tiny stuff, and it's kind of cool to look forward to and explore.
Well, it's funny because I was recently talking to somebody about like what's coming in over the next month, and it's like, you know, Google I/O is mid-May, right? So at some point Google's going to stop announcing stuff because they want to announce it at Google I/O. Yeah. But like, you're absolutely right. It just seems like there's just this drumbeat all the time of stuff happening from all corners of the company, good or bad. And so you're right. Like, I guess we kind of take it for granted because there is so much going on. So.
Yeah. But then I always come back to the question of like taking this kind of release of features and stuff for a few services that we probably use on a semi-regular basis, at least, how many of these new features are you going to use?
Yeah.
Like I use Circle to Search. Like I actually use that on a regular basis now. And I know, Ron, you don't because Google hates you, but
like, I have it on. Not, so JR, to give you the background, I have to factory reset my Pixel 8 Pro because I got the update, but Circle of Search is nowhere to be found in the settings or anything like that. So but strange. I have on my Pixel 8, regular Pixel 8, that is not my daily driver. It's on there, so I don't know, but I still don't have it. But
curious.
But so you're using it a lot, Jason. It's changed the way you search.
Well, I mean, it hasn't changed the way I search, but there are times where it totally is the right tool for the job. Where I'm like, yeah, what is that? Like,
should know. My dad is on a Samsung, I think S23, and he got it this week.
He's like,
I got this cool Circle to Search thing. I was like, damn it,
Google, don't you know I'm on an Android podcast?
But yeah, I think one thing you forgot to mention during this whole roundup is that Circle to Search is now available on more older Pixel phones while you're still waiting for it to launch.
I wouldn't say I forgot it, Michelle. It is going wider. There, every time you see Circle Search, it's being rolled out to more phones. So
yeah, because cool. Google knows like that's a pretty kind of magical / useful, I think, for a wider range of people. The like virtual try on clothes with generative AI.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Those are things that you kind of stumble across and
I think JR is right, though. I don't think we're the demographic. I got to imagine that there are, you know, there are people who do that. I mean, I think my wife would do that. I see her over her shoulder looking at clothes and like people wearing them and stuff like that. I think,
I'm just jaded. I'm really tall and nothing ever fits me. So I'm jaded.
Except for the snazzy new Android Faithful t-shirt.
For this like a dream. Wonderful shirt.
We've been avoiding this.
I'm actually curious. If you were to Circle to Search this right now, like would it appear on searches?
Oh.
Someone do it right now. I have a OnePlus open. It doesn't have Circle to Search. Someone's got to try that.
Well, I mean, that's a good segue because we did get an email, and I'm gonna circumvent what we're talking about right now. I'm going to hijack to do our first email of the evening. Steve wrote in, and he said, I got my Android Faithful t-shirt and had Be My AI, part of the Be My Eyes app, describe it for me. And he sent the AI description of the Android Faithful t-shirt. The picture shows a black t-shirt lying on a cream-colored surface, possibly a bed. The t-shirt has a graphic and text on it. The graphic is a stylized representation of a green Android robot with a blue line graph emerging from its head, suggesting thought or activity. Below the graphic, the text reads Android in lowercase green letters, followed by Faithful in white uppercase letters. The overall design seems to suggest loyalty or dedication to the Android platform. So, Thank you, Steve, for that AI description of the Android Faithful t-shirt. And you can get yours over at Threadless at androidfaithful.threadless.com. And for our audio listeners, Jason, Michelle, and JR are all wearing the t-shirt, and I did not get the memo.
It was not coordinated. I did the quick circle to search. I just went to the camera, flipped it to the selfie cam, circled it. I don't know. It's probably not going to show up great. But yeah, yes. I got it. It brought up results. It worked.
So. Wow. Did it bring up results to Threadless, though?
Let me see what they are. So there's apparently one on eBay.
No way, really?
Well, it might be something. It might just be similar. It might just be similar. I don't think it's it. No, the top result is David Gerbino on X, who posted about it.
We know David. Yeah. So
it does not have Threadless, actually.
Wait a minute. Someone's bootlegging our show on our show t-shirt on eBay?
I pre-listed mine. I'm going to wear it tonight, sell it, you know.
There is a short list of things that happened on the internet over the past 20 years that I've still yet to get comfortable with, and one of them is seeing something that you've created being sold on eBay by somebody else, which has happened to me. I did a zine back in college, like in the 90s, like a newsprint zine, and I have found people selling copies of it on eBay, which blows my mind.
Right. So, wow. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's so, okay. The second or maybe third result was a tweet or whatever we're calling them, an X, from at Android Faithful that linked to it. So it didn't have the direct result, but it got people there. You know, it worked.
There it is. So
it recognized it. It paired it.
That's too funny.
That's pretty awesome.
That's funny. So, so head over to Threadless at androidfaithful.threadless.com. You can get your own wonderful Android Faithful t-shirt.
We are so pluggy today.
I know. We're so pluggy between the intelligence and the Threadless.
The pluggy episode. But that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
Okay, on a non-plugging subject, I saw something the other day about, and I don't remember quite the context, but someone from Samsung commented that they were seeing more use with Circle to Search already than with their Galaxy AI features, which I find to be really telling because the AI stuff, AI is whatever it is. You could say Circle to Search uses AI, but AI in the current... you know, definition of how it's being branded is like the hot buzzword trendy thing, but it kind of gets back to just the simple Circle to Search is basically Google Now on tap from many years ago. And that's still the more useful thing than being able to tell a computer to write poorly written text for you in every possible interface and prompt on your phone and computer.
Yeah. And it's dead simple. Like you just, you tap and hold and it does the thing, basically. You know, there isn't a whole lot to know about it other than point at the thing or circle it.
And that's, it was cool a decade ago with Now on Tap, so it's still cool today.
That's right.
Part of that may also be because Google is marketing the heck out of Circle to Search. I see it everywhere.
Yeah.
Like in ads on YouTube, on Reddit, on Twitter. Like it's everywhere I scroll. I mean, I know I'm on tech YouTube, tech Twitter, tech Reddit all the time, but I just see it so much more than even like Galaxy S24 ads.
That in and of itself is pretty impressive because Google's usually so bad at marketing. I mean, it doesn't usually promote any of its own stuff, as we know, as we've talked about so many times over the years.
Totally.
They're trying. They're trying, though.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of they're trying, Michelle, what's the latest with the Android 15 front?
So, Google is trying. They're on a multi-year path to... combat so-called Stingray devices. These are devices that are popular among law enforcement agencies, among like government actors, among like hackers, basically to mimic a real cellular network and convince your device to connect to it instead of the real cellular network operated by your carrier. And what these Stingray devices do is they collect your device's unique identifier information, such as the IMCA or IMEI, which you may be familiar with. And using these, they can pinpoint and target specifically your device for analysis or interception. They can do things like try to downgrade the connection on your device to a older, insecure 2G network, or use a insecure, unencrypted protocol to try to have your device send text messages or calls through the fake network so that they can then like intercept and try to read your messages. And what Google has been trying to do is been trying to combat like the underlying technologies that these Stingrays take advantage of. So in Android 12, they added support for disabling 2G connectivity at the modem level so that if you disable 2G, well, then these Stingrays can't downgrade your device to 2G because it's just not available on the device anymore. In Android 14, they added support for disabling connections that used a, quote, cellular null cipher, which is a form of unencrypted communication. And in Android 15, it looks like they're adding a new cellular transparency feature that basically discloses whenever your device's unique identifier is being accessed. This would basically tell you that, hey, you might be connected to a Stingray because this network is trying to access your unique cellular ID. And there's also going to be a an alert whenever your network is trying to basically downgrade you to an insecure connection. So this is another way potentially the OS could inform you that you might not be on a legitimate cellular network. You might be on an insecure one operated by a Stingray, or potentially just on a really bad commercial cellular network that's operating an insecure connection. And this cellular transparency feature is something they're working on for Android 15. I spotted hints of it, and I wrote about it for Android Authority. But you can't enable it right now because, for one, the settings page for it is not available at this moment. And two, this requires support from the modem vendor to add support for it, because this requires the modem itself to be able to disclose to the OS whenever these identifiers are being sent to the network, or to, for the modem to disclose to the OS whenever an insecure connection is being attempted. So it's not something Android itself can do. This is something that Android has to communicate with the underlying modem, which is often the firmware for which is often written by a third party, like Qualcomm, for example, like Samsung for the Exynos modem. So it's something that you won't see on all devices, but if we do see it on some devices, it could potentially save users from these malicious Stingray attacks, which are unfortunately commonly used to target high-profile individuals like journalists or people who are, you know, being targeted by, you know, nation states that don't want them to, you know, disclose certain information or say bad things about them, you know. That's one feature. Another feature that Google's working on is somewhat adjacent to this. It's a location privacy feature. And I also wrote about this for Android Authority. And basically what this does is there are certain ways that carriers can request your location. And one of them is called a NI-LR, which is a network-initiated location request. And this is when a cellular network itself triggers a process of determining your device's location over the GSM standard. This is typically used for critical scenarios such as getting your location for the purposes of sending emergency services your way. And this, whenever they initiate a location request using this method, they can bypass getting your user's permission to do this, because this is, you know, they need your permission, your location right now, so they can send 911 your way. But a malicious Stingray device could use this network initiated location request without caring that, you know, it's, you actually need help right now, right? So they could do this to bypass any user consent needed for accessing your location. So what this new location privacy feature is doing, it will explicitly restrict these network-initiated location requests from sharing your location if you've denied location access. So this is basically ensuring that this feature can only be used by networks if it's explicitly being used for emergency calls. So like if you're placing an emergency call from your phone or emergency text from your phone, that's the only scenario where your location can be shared with the carrier. And of course, there are still ways for carriers to get your approximate location. They can determine what cell towers you're connected to, and then, you know, try to triangulate your position based on your signal strength and your angle from multiple different cell towers. So this is not stopping your carrier from getting your location, but it could stop one way that malicious Stingray devices abuse to get your exact location.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like that Google is making these changes. It's not, I don't know that these are necessarily those kind of marquee feature things necessarily, because a lot of people are going to be like, Stingray, what? But I appreciate that Google continues to go down this road, and I'm curious to know how the carriers feel about that.
I mean, there's a whole layer of stuff that the average user isn't even aware of until it's too late, right? Or until, you know, but the fact that they are thinking of these particular cases and developing this stuff, I think is, you know, continues to show the stability of the platform and, you know, that sort of thing.
So. Right. Right.
This kind of stuff too. I mean, you know, it's easy to focus on the marquee features when we talk about an Android update, but I've written a lot, as you all certainly know, over the years about Android upgrades. I do these report cards. I'm actually getting ready to do another one very soon, grading how the manufacturers do. And there's always inevitably some response of people who say, I don't care. I don't need the latest update anyway. I'm going to get this phone by this person. It doesn't mean anything to me. I don't care about the features. I don't need their interface. And sure, to each their own. But this is the kind of stuff that I always come back to and say, this is why Android upgrades matter. Whether you care about whatever feature XYZ or the poison polish or the interface or whatever, these kind of things matter. And these kind of things are often only able to be provided at the platform level, whether it's this stuff, other privacy and security stuff, API restrictions. Even if you don't see them or know them or think about them, these are the things that someday may really make a big difference, and you're not going to have them if you're not getting active, regular, timely upgrades.
Yep. Agreed. Can we just take a moment and appreciate that, JR, you have a Nexus Q in the background?
Well done, sir. Yeah. in videos, there's... There have been so many times where somebody in a comment or an email or a tweet or whatever asks me, what is that flashy thing? I think you're the first person who's ever just identified it right off the bat.
Well, you want to know why? Because A, I have one.
Yeah.
And B, for years, and I'm talking years in my office at the Twit studio, it was plugged in flashing all over the place and draining electricity unnecessarily.
Well, I will say,
I'm a little guilty, but it was a pretty light.
I've been slowly unpacking my belongings over a decade of moving from New York to San Francisco, back to New York, and then moving twice in New York. And I did uncover the box with my Nexus Q. Sure enough, it was, it's still there. So
still
it's
there.
Not pulsing, but it's not draining electricity, but it's still there. So
it doesn't do much, but it makes a pretty little light.
Yeah. So.
it inspires curiosity. In fact, I'm thinking I need to plug that into my little backdrop downstairs. Yeah, thank you for the reminder.
I wonder, do you think the Nexus Q would, if they added AI to it, Jason, it would drain more electricity?
Yeah, potentially so. Yes. Yeah. I don't think the Nexus Q has anywhere near the amount of capability to run Gemini, let's say. Just throwing that out of, thin air here randomly. But speaking of that, since we're talking about Gemini, Google had, you may remember, said recently that Pixel 8... Not the 8 Pro. The 8 Pro, gets the Gemini AI on board, but saying that the Pixel 8 would not get Gemini's AI models running on the device. They had cited hardware limitations for this fact, but they're kind of changing their story now, at least sort of. Now Google is saying that the Pixel 8 will get Gemini in the next quarterly Android update, but it's going to be a little different. It's only going to be a developer option. So you have to activate your developer options menu, and then you can go in there, apparently, once this update comes through on your Pixel 8, and you can activate the Gemini features. Now, Google had said initially, like I said, hardware limitations. Now they're getting a little clearer about this. Google had cited that the Pixel 8 has the 8 gigs of RAM and said that was a key factor compared to the 8 Pro's 12 gigs of RAM. 12 gigs allows the model to be more easily loaded into memory on the device, which is a big priority for Google and the Gemini Nano model. But if you want to, tax your Pixel 8 and go into the developer settings and flick it on and go nuts, that's going to be coming to your device here pretty soon.
Is anyone here actually using the Gemini features of any sort, like regularly, beyond just kind of screwing around with them and testing them?
Regularly, no, not really. Although, I don't know if it's Gemini necessarily, but for preparing for this show, one of the first articles that we had, it was one of those 6 ways to travel smarter this summer. And I noticed at the very top of Google's blog, I'm showing the wrong thing right now. I noticed at the top of Google's blog post for that had a little button, summarize this article by pushing this button, and I pushed it and it summarized it. And I don't know if it gave me and if it saved me any time or not, but that may have been Gemini.
Well, Google, I've been using Gemini regularly, mainly as a writing tool. Hey, take a look at this and make it better. I'll do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Or I'll use it as a writing prompt. I'll give it a, I need to do this sort of thing. Give me a template to start with, and then I'll edit the heck out of it and then bring it back in to correct it and or make it better or make it less wordy or whatever. Because I tend to be I'm from the Jack Kerouac stream of consciousness writing school, where it tends to be a little more wordy than I like it. So like it makes it a little more concise. It's been good.
Yeah.
I also use Gemini in that I downloaded I was doing some research for a project and I downloaded a state business document filing that was like 80 pages, whatever. And I asked it to look at this and summarize and tell me I'm looking for this sort of thing. And it went through and here's what you need to know, blah, blah, blah. Here's where you can find more information. And so it has been handy. So
I think when it comes specifically to Gemini Nano, which is the topic of this conversation, sure, regular Pixel 8 users haven't been missing out on much so far because there's only three features currently that it powers, which is the summarization feature in the Pixel Recorder app, the Magic Compose feature in the Google Messages app, and then Smart Replies in Gboard. And Smart Replies in Gboard seems to be the main reason, basically, why Google held back Gemini Nano on the regular Pixel 8. Because as the article noted, Google said that basically they want the AI models to be resident in memory, to be basically always available. Because if you're loading up a messaging app like WhatsApp, right, you want the AI model to be ready to generate a smart reply immediately. Mm. You don't want it to be able to wait and then once you're quickly replying, like it takes like 5 seconds for a smart reply to show up, right? You want it to be immediately available. But to do that, you have to have part of the memory at least running available in memory at all times. And so with 8 gigabytes of RAM, there's already so much other stuff running that you might have to close off other processes to make that possible. So I guess the mistake that Google made, I guess, was saying that there was a hardware limitation when it was never a hardware limitation. It was more a product management decision from the beginning. It was kind of obvious because the Galaxy S24 base model has 8 gigs of RAM and that supports Gemini Nano. But, you know, after all the backlash, I guess they decided to cave. Google was, as The Verge put it, Google was bullied into reversing their decision and enabling Gemini Nano. Well, and we'll have to see how well it actually runs once they enable it.
That's my question is it going to be a noticeable like slowdown difference? And if that is related to, you know, 8 gigs of RAM versus 12 gigs of RAM, then I guess technically it is a hardware limitation. You know, it's 8 gigs of RAM on the device and it should be 12 in order to run at full speed or full effectiveness, you know?
Even if 8 gigs of RAM is insufficient, if you're a consumer, right, the blame still goes to Google because they're the ones who decided to put 8 gigs of RAM in the base model. And of course, like, obviously there's a Pixel team who probably decided on 8 gigs of RAM a long time ago, like over a year ago. And then there's the Gemini team, which scrambled to make all this stuff happen in the midst of, you know, ChatGPT and OpenAI and all this stuff. Yeah. Like, there was probably decisions made, 8 gigs of RAM is enough for our base model phone a year ago. Clearly, that's not the case anymore. And going forward, if I see 8 gigs of RAM on a flagship phone, it's not a recommendation for me anymore.
No. It even sounds insufficient in today's day and age. Yeah, with smartphones.
Brutal.
For sure.
All right. So quickly to check in on the RCS drama. I know it's been a little quiet about that lately, but last week the news kind of broke thanks to the fact that Google noted on its website that RCS is coming to the iPhone in the fall of 2024. Notice Apple did not announce this. Apple still hasn't officially revealed it, but the fact that Google has said that it's coming makes you think that it really is. It also revealed that animated emoji reactions are coming soon with RCS because everybody loves animated emojis. And maybe this means that the reactions might become part of the RCS spec in the future. Right now, Google has its own approach. So does iOS. Maybe they're figuring out how to bring them all to the middle, together in this wonderful, you know, utopia that will be RCS for everybody that we have. But we'll see. So we'll see if this actually all happens this fall or not. So,
you know, I kind of doubt that Apple is going to ever announce publicly that RCS is arriving. If you go back to when they first said this, they never announced it themselves. They literally just sent out an email to some like Apple friendly, I'll say, tech outlets like 9to5Mac, et cetera, right? They never actually put out a public statement on their blog, no social media statements or anything of the sort. When they roll out RCS support in the Apple Messages app, presumably with iOS 18, do you think they're going to mention it in their keynote? I highly doubt that. Do you think they're going to mention it in their changelog? Probably not. They already confirmed that they're going to leave the text bubble color as green for RCS chats.
Yep.
Like, they're probably... We're going to have to hope that Apple users figure out that, hey, green bubble of the past meant that you had SMS, green bubble now means they have RCS and you don't have all the same limitations anymore.
Which, what are the odds that the norms...
Yeah, what are the odds that everyone don't get the memo?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So
that would probably be fine by Apple. I mean, this goes against Apple's business interests. So they probably don't want people to notice or make a big deal about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, totally true. Ridiculous. Totally.
All right. What can he do? All we can do is thank our patrons.
Let's see here. We got some patron shout outs. First of all, I want to give a big thank you to Mark Fleming, Jeremy Paulus, Nikolaj Hesselhotskov. Did I pronounce that correctly? From Denmark? I certainly hope so. Charles Gilagli, Clint McCollum. Man, we have a lot of patrons, don't we?
We do. And we've upped it from 3 thank yous up to 5 because I want to catch up on the backlog. So,
heck yes.
Thank you, patrons.
My goodness. And we are also, you know, putting our patrons to work with artwork, although it's really patrons via generative AI, and we're coming up with some really cool things each and every week. Who did this one, Ron?
This one, I'm sorry, I had it and now I just lost it. I think this is from Bob Rissler, who's in the chat right now and on the live stream watching Bob's awesome little mecha bug droid reading the news. So it's got a great little mech outfit, costume, robot-y kind of thing. So thank you, Bob, for sending that in for our patron news pick graphic of the week, brought to you by Generative AI.
Love it. Keep them coming, y'all. Yep. That is really cool,
Bob. Yeah, and if you and we're running low, so we need some more bug droid reading the news graphics. So send them to contact@androidfaithful.com. So please do.
Right. And we had some links, some stories to vote on. And boy, it was a runaway this week. But Humane's new AI pin working with Google Photos and Contacts, 16%. Samsung.
I thought that would do better. I thought people want to hear about Humane, but I guess not. So,
I guess not. Well. Samsung is revamping its Bixby voice assistant with generative AI. Maybe it's the AI aspect of this. Yeah, because the winning choice has nothing to do, as far as I can tell, with AI, but has everything to do with you, Michelle, because you wrote the article. Android 15 could revamp the volume panel and make it collapsible. Tell us about this.
Well, it's better if I show you instead of just tell you. So as you can see, if you're watching the video feed right now, Google's working on a revamp to the Android volume panel UI. This is the panel that shows up when you press the volume key and then tap the little three-dot icon on the bottom. This revamped volume panel UI, by default, when you're listening to music, it's collapsed. So the only slider you have is a media slider. And then above it, you have a shortcut to the output switcher. But this new volume panel UI, it's very bubbly, very colorful. It kind of reminds me of the volume UI when you open the media output switcher and like you're switching between your current device or a cast device or your Bluetooth device. And instead of these really thin bars for media call notification ringtone, you have these really thick bubbles instead as your sliders. Like functionally, it's still the same thing. Like you're just controlling the volume, but design-wise, it's very, very different. It's way bigger, much more colorful. These playful animations happen when you slide up and down that basically move the text left and right. You have the actual volume level as a number shown on the left side when you're swinging it left and right. You can tap on the icon to the left to quickly mute that stream. And you can tap a button next to the media volume to collapse or expand the entire slider. So this is a significant redesign to the volume panel, which hasn't had a change since Android 9 Pie, because that was when this version of the volume slider was first introduced. It was actually using an API called the Slices API, which no other app basically uses. So basically what it's doing is, if you go to settings and then the sound and vibration settings, that whole section up top, what the volume panel is basically doing is just taking a slice of that settings page and showing it in that panel. Hence why it's called the Slices API. It's taking a slice of some other component and showing it somewhere else. But basically no one else is using the Slices API, and it seems like this new version of the panel is completely independent of that settings page. So they could add some wild things to it. They could add whatever they want now. It looks like they might add some inbuilt noise controls that might have something to do with Pixel Buds. They might add toggles to change between the spatial, between head tracking or no head tracking for spatial audio. They could add some other stuff related to it, but this is just a preview, basically, of what I enabled in the Android 15 Developer Preview 2 build, and I'm sure we'll find more. Speaking of which, I did find more just earlier today. I posted about some other UI changes coming to Android 15. These are coming to the status bar. We might be getting new icons for the Wi-Fi signal strength, for the mobile data signal strength, and for the battery level. And when I posted this article, I asked my followers, what do you guys think of this? And it feels like the response has been pretty overwhelmingly negative. I don't know how you guys feel about this. Like, Ron, Jason, JR, this might be your first time seeing this. I don't know if you saw my post from earlier today. What do you guys think of this new volume? These new status bar icon?
You know what it reminds me of looking at it for the very first time right now? It reminds me of the modifications that I saw when I was rooting and ROMing my devices.
Yeah,
and that's pretty spot on.
The different like mods would be like, oh, well, we've added a new style to the battery that makes it look like a battery. And I like the elegance of this, the simplicity of this versus this. It just kind of feels kind of needless.
I'm torn here because... I don't know, because like I my first glance is I don't care, because it just it tells me what the battery percentage is, and that's all I really want. I don't care how you're doing it, right? As long as I can see what the percentage is. But I feel like the old version was just more to the point. Like I always automatically change it to show me the percentage. Like the people who anybody who has just the battery icon and can use that to eyeball their battery, you're a savant or understand icons a better way than I do. But like, I need that percentage number. The old way, it's kind of bigger and to the point, where this, it looks, it's kind of hard to see.
It's hard to see. That's what I'm realizing. Yeah. Especially like, this is a really great example. We've got on the video version, kind of a side by side or a top to bottom of the Android 14 version with the charging battery, and then next to it, the words. And then of course it's got the colored kind of pill shape around that. And I feel like you can get that small and still read it. The other version, the new version, it's all in, you know, it's the pill, and then inside of the pill is the smaller battery, and then inside the smaller battery is the number, and the battery happens to be full. So instead of it being like a nice contrast of the you know, let's say the empty battery color, which is bright, and the dark, bold kind of numbers, it's like the dark numbers on top of a dark shaded background. It's just, it's harder to see or know what you're actually looking at. I don't like it.
It does feel like the opposite progression of what you'd expect. I feel like looking at the new version,
totally
that would be the old version. And not to say that this is this bad, this dated, but it kind of brings me like a gingerbread sort of feel, like that sort of era 2.x of Android. I feel like that would be where it came from, and then the design would get simplified to what it is presently. That being said, I'm sure if this happens, we'll all gripe about it for a few months and then get used to it and forget. But looking at it side by side, it does feel like the backwards progression to me.
It's funny because going back to the volume slider thing, I feel like the current volume slider is broken, right? I feel like we can all agree. Like this is the one that won the patron pick, right? The current volume slider doesn't give you as much control. We want more detail and all this sort of stuff. But Michelle, the video that you showed, that we're getting what we want, and my first reaction is like, oh, that's too much, right? Like, it's just like it's huge, and like there's so much, like it's definitely more bubbly. And remember, Jason, when they first, oh god, this is years ago, but remember when they moved to like, they went from really thin, small kind of UI stuff to really big, chunky kind of style, and we're like, oh, this is whatever. And JR, is the same thing, where like you gripe about it the first time you see it, you kind of groan, and then you use it and you just forget about it and you move on, right? Until you see the next iteration. So it's
and they'll change it back again in another 2 years anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that these UI changes, like the status bar icons and the volume panel, they aren't active yet in Android 15 developer preview 2. I had to manually enable them, and there's a chance that these are not the final designs. I mean, of course, they're not the final designs. They're not even active yet in the developer preview. Yeah. So they could be updated, or they might not ever go live in the betas or the stable build later this fall. So we'll have to wait and see.
All right, we'll wait and see. Cool. Well, thank you to all the patrons who voted for the news pick of the week. Go to patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. You can vote every week. Every Monday it goes up. If you become a patron this week, you can get access to the intelligence at a discounted rate. We thank you for your support. You guys are awesome. So
now's the time. Go, 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 go. All right, coming up, we've got some hardware to talk about. All right. When we were prepping for today's show, I was like, man, we've already talked about the 3 Pixel 9 future, but kind of sounded like maybe we hadn't, or if we had, it was kind of, you know, a while ago. And I guess in my mind, I was like, yeah, I've heard of this before. So I assumed we had talked about it on the show. So what am I even talking about? Apparently, the Pixel 9 is potentially going to have 3 different models, not just 2, which we're kind of used to at this point. It's going to be the Pixel 9, the 9 Pro, and the 9 Pro XL, which is kind of funny. How do I explain this? Earlier in January, we discussed a render. I think it was by 91 Mobiles. That was, at the time, we thought the Pixel 9 and the 9 Pro. Turns out, according to OnLeaks, that those were actually the 9 Pro and the 9 XL, or Pro XL, or whatever they're calling it. Now we have the design, according to this leak, again on 91 Mobiles, by OnLeaks, of the Pixel 9. So this would be kind of like the baseline device, I guess the smaller, lesser of the 3 devices, which, you know, is evidenced by the, I guess, do the other ones have 3 lenses and this one only has 2? That's my understanding anyways, although that kind of looks like it's already filled out. But anyways, similar in design to the 9 Pro, dual camera setup. You know, of course, the camera bar is kind of like the big pill format, which actually, now that I'm looking at it, looks a lot like the volume sliders that we were just looking at. Rounded corners all around, flat display on the front, 6.03 inch display, in fact. So, yeah, this is kind of what we're looking at right here. We actually have even a render of it as well. So there you go. There it is. Soak it in. The Pixel 9 in all its glory.
The 3 models that are rumored, how do we feel about that? Do we feel as if it's too much?
Yeah, is it necessary?
Right, because that's the conversation I'm seeing online, which is like, are they pushing the limit? Like, do we really need 3 models at this point?
I feel like 3 makes sense if the lesser one is a lot smaller. Yeah. Sorry.
We basically already do have 3 models, if you consider the A-series basically part of the lineup. And there were rumors that Google may not continue the A-series next year. So this could basically be, you know, like, in the future, we might only have the main 9, 9 Plus maybe, and 9 Pro, basically to mimic kind of like the Galaxy, you know, the S-series, the S-Plus, the S-Ultra, and also put it more comparably to the iPhone, the iPhone base model, the Plus, the Pro, and the Pro Max, right? So they could be doing something similar. Because right now there's a huge price gap between the base Pixel 8 and the Pixel 8 Pro, and they might have something like right in the middle to basically appeal to both ends.
That's an interesting point. That would kind of make it make sense. My initial reaction is also it seems like it's going to confuse people and be too much. I was a long time compact phone holdout, and I resisted. I kind of went back and forth as I had to, but I never really liked the larger, you know, plus size phones. They're all plus size phones now, but were once plus size phones. But that being said, it's been long enough that I feel like even I've kind of gotten used to it. And given the choice, I have the Pixel 8 Pro. If I could get that same phone in a smaller form, I don't know that I would. I've kind of gotten used to it. But what Michelle's saying makes a lot of sense, that it could fill the gap of if they're potentially going to phase out the A model at some point. It seems like a shame because the A model was once the affordable option and it's kind of crept up. So people who don't want to pay flagship prices don't have a great mid-range, upper budgety kind of option in the Pixel domain anymore, which is a shame.
But from a product marketing standpoint, I do find it interesting because, like, if you roll, because I like the calendar placement of the A phones, right? You had the launch of the we'll just say for now the 8 and the 8 Pro, with a fall launch, and then the A coming several months afterwards, right? So you had windows of purchases for those customers, and I wonder if you get rid of the A and just have three phones at that fall point, are they cannibalizing potential? I don't know. I'm sure that there are people analyzing the sales numbers and talking through this stuff. I'm sure Samsung's been through this as well. You know, when to roll out the phone and that sort of thing. But I guess time will tell.
Does Google follow in Samsung's footsteps and separate out the foldable thing into its own time period? And,
right.
You know, have its standard phones is another.
So many questions that'll be answered this year.
So many questions, and all we can do is guess.
So many. Well, one of my big questions lately is, can they make foldables any lighter? And luckily, Vivo is stepping up to the up to the plate and saying, yes, we can, because the latest foldable is the Vivo X Fold 3, which is a book-style foldable, and it weighs 219 grams, which is very light considering that it has a 5,700 milliamp battery in there. And fun fact, it's also lighter than most candy bar phones. In fact, it's lighter than the Samsung S24 Ultra and the iPhone 15 Pro Max. So it's a foldable that's lighter than those.
That's a heavy phone, yeah.
Yeah. So it's got an 8.03-inch 120 hertz interior display and a 6.53-inch 120 hertz cover display. And it's running the Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 chipset. And it's got 16 gig of RAM, 512 gig of storage, or 16 gig of RAM and 1 terabyte of storage. And like I said, the Pro model has a large battery of 5,700 milliamps. So you can get a 1 terabyte foldable phone with a 5,700 milliamp battery, and it can be light as a feather. So
they're getting light, they're getting thin, these foldables.
I've never held a Vivo phone in my hand, but I sure would like to, because every time I see one of their phones come out, I'm like, oh, that's nice, I like that. But
Ron, you would like this to be your hand right here.
I would. I can only wish. Yeah. So it's got the big round camera, like the OnePlus kind of style. Not Hasselblad, but the circle camera design. What's the word I'm looking for? The camera unit, whatever it
camera
is.
Camera bump module.
Camera module. Yeah.
Thingamajigger, I believe.
Yeah, thingamajigger. So it does look like the OnePlus Open in terms of book style dimensions and size and, you know, kind of orientation, which I do approve of as the right dimensions for a fold. So
I mean, look at the thinness of one half of it is slightly larger, like ever so slightly larger than the port for the USB-C.
That's a very good indicator. Yeah.
If
that says anything, I don't know.
Yeah. It really feels like we're at the cusp of foldables becoming more and more mainstream, marketable, capable. I mean, the Pixel Fold was the first foldable phone I could actually see myself using. I was really tempted to get it until the Pixel 8 came out. Yep. And it was kind of a little bit of a toss-up for me. But seeing the technology get thinner, the compromises around it get less with each generation, I think that's going to be a really cool area, a fun area to watch in the next few years.
So, JR, it's funny because like when the Pixel Fold came out, I felt the same way. I'm like, oh, this is a foldable I could get behind. Have you seen or held the OnePlus Open yet?
Yeah, no, it's really cool. I get stuck on software, and I just the OnePlus software just doesn't do it for me. The slow updates don't do it for me. I know a lot of people love OnePlus, and in the past I've been OnePlus curious. At this point, I've kind of gotten a little turned off by some of the things they're doing. But hardware wise, that thing is phenomenal. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, just the feel of it and the shape and everything. I just really like that one a lot. So yeah,
absolutely. It'll be interesting to see what Google takes from other places and how it pushes its Pixel Fold forward. Mm-hmm. And who, if anyone, ends up really running away with that crown. I mean, it's so early in the game yet.
Indeed. All right,
sir, or is it game, sir? That's what we'll call you, Michelle. You are a game, sir.
Yes, I am a game, sir. I have been using a controller called the Game Sir, and I'm going to switch my camera over so I can show you the controller in question. Okay, it works.
Very nice.
I've been using the Game Sir X2S mobile gaming controller for a little over a week now, and I'm absolutely loving this thing. I've been using its predecessor, let me pull it out right here, the regular Game Sir X2, for over a year now, and the new X2S just adds on to what already worked really well in that controller. So let me just tell you why this is basically my favorite gaming controller for Android phones. First things first, the Gamester X2S and the X2 before it are some of the only telescopic gaming controllers that have a USB Type-C port on the left half. So a lot of other controllers have a Type-C port on the right half, and the reason that's important to me specifically is because it makes it friendly to use with book-style foldable phones like the OnePlus Open. Imagine if the port was on the right. I would have to extend half of my screen below it, so I would basically have like this right here with half the screen extending below the controller, and that would be really unergonomic to use. But fortunately, I don't have to do that because I can just stick it in like right here, and let me just show you quickly. I can just use this extending Type-C port. I can just plug it in, and then what I do is I just extend this outward.
You're blowing my mind using one of these things on a foldable, like a
it's crazy. It's so good.
That's
so
good.
That's cool.
Even though it's so big, by the way, oh, this is something I'll talk about later. The app is a little buggy. Perfect, huh? It just had to crash right there. But even with how big this looks in hand, like ergonomically, it feels great to hold. It has soft, rounded corners that make it easy to place against my palm, as well as a rubber grip on the back that you can place your fingers over. All the face and shoulder buttons feel great and are very clicky. Like, it does feel a bit heavy to hold. As you can see, this thing is massive after a few hours of gaming. But I chalk that up mainly to how I play it, you know, lying down on my couch and then like holding this thing up while looking down on it from underneath and, you know, basically holding this thing up without any elbow support for like a couple hours. And, you know, it is kind of heavy compared to the Razer Kishi. This thing by itself is about 100 grams heavier than the Razer Kishi or comparable controllers, but I think it's just constructed significantly better. The Kishi to me felt flimsy and cheap, whereas this just a harder plastic shell, it just feels much sturdier. At no point have I felt that my phone was going to fall out or be damaged when enclosed. You know, it's pretty easy, as I showed you, to get this phone in and out. Like, just to get it out, all I gotta do is extend this out a little bit. And then, basically what I do is like this, just pull it up a little bit, and then it just pops right out. And then you can just plug it back in, because the Type-C port can be angled, right? So it's just really easy to pop in and out.
Can you, and when it's in there, can I ask you a real quick question, because it's so foldable? Oh, no, it's folding the wrong way. I was wondering, or no, it's not. Can you fold the top of that down a little bit, or would that even, I don't even think.
Oh,
that,
no, I can do that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know what that would give you, but, you know. But you can. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to play it like a Nintendo DS, if you have like a Nintendo
totally.
DS emulator.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, wow.
Totally
up to you. A DS emulator if Nintendo wasn't nuking them at this
I was going to say, yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
You could. It's easy to get the phone in and out, as I said, and the best part is that all the parts that the phone comes in contact with are protected by like this really kind of hard rubber part, so you don't have to worry at all about like your phone getting damaged. And there's even like a slight gap, kind of hard to see, between the part here and the camera bump, so nothing ever gets scratched for me. And another key aspect of the controller is its use of Hall Effect joysticks. So these joysticks have a magnetic field sensor to measure position and movement of my joystick input. In contrast, standard analog joysticks use potentiometers to measure position and movement. And if you're a gamer, one benefit you may have heard about of Hall Effect joysticks is that they're significantly less susceptible to stick drift, which is when your stick is basically moving in games even when it should be in its neutral position. And I mean, I can't tell you if this is actually a problem with this controller in particular, because I just have not had it nearly long enough. I've only had it for about a week. And to be fair, I've had my regular Gamester X2 for over a year, and I still don't have stick drift on that. But that is a problem that can happen long term with these kinds of joysticks on these kinds of controllers, which are much more common. Hall Effect joysticks are not nearly as common as the regular potentiometer-based joysticks. But so, you know, if you plan to use this for a long time, it is definitely nice to have that, you know, for as a feature. And as a bonus, Gamester includes two pairs of silicone grips. I have added the convex silicone grips to my device, potentially, and they feel really, really nice to use. But if you prefer concave, they also had it in this little packet that they give you with the controller that's inside this box. Okay, and this controller also has Hall Effect analog triggers. So what that does is allows you to switch between hair and analog trigger modes. If you press down on the capture key, which is this bottom left button, plus the left and right triggers for 2 seconds. In the default analog trigger mode, the triggers are pressure sensitive and can detect exactly how much you're pressing down. I'm going to open up the Gamester controller, a Gamester app. Hopefully it doesn't crash. Hopefully I can show you the gamepad test. So I'm like pressing down right now. You can kind of see it's like pressure sensitive, right? A lot of controllers, if you enable the hair trigger mode, if I just tap it lightly, it would go immediately to 255. It would take a little bit of time to change mode, so I'm not going to do that right now. But this is the default analog mode. It's like detecting exactly how much pressure I'm putting down.
Wow.
You can also enable turbo mode for any of the face or shoulder buttons by pressing down on the capture key, then tapping the button you want. This basically, just sets up the rapid input of buttons so you don't have to like constantly mash A and you're by yourself. By default, the controller has an Xbox-style button layout, so A, B, X, Y. But if you want to swap the A, B button so that B is basically here and A is here to match the Nintendo Switch layout, you can hold the capture plus A button down for 2 seconds, and that swaps these two buttons so that they do the opposite of what they do right now. You can also change from the default X input mode to the direct input mode by holding the Gamester and this S button here down for a couple of seconds. There's also awesomely a G-Touch mode, which is a really weird name, but what it does is it allows you to map button inputs to touches on screen. And you can only do this by launching a game directly through the Gamester app. Here I have a screenshot of Genshin Impact, which normally does not support controller inputs, but through G-Touch mode, I'm able to basically, you can see here, this is just a screenshot, but like I had A mapped to the attack button, B mapped to the jump button, and then like my left analog stick allows me to move the game character left and right, the camera left and right. This is much better than third-party solutions, like third-party apps like Mantis Gamepad, which also can map button inputs. But those use kind of like hacky workarounds to intercept your key presses on your controller, and then they inject touch inputs. So this is a much better built-in solution offered through the Gamester app, which also offers a whole bunch of other features to, test your gamepad, update the firmware, change your buttons, etc. The last thing I wanted to mention is that there's a pass-through USB Type-C port at the bottom so that you can charge your phone while you're gaming. That's really nice so that, you can game for longer or you're short on battery and you don't want to quit your gaming session. So overall, this device is a great gaming controller considering the build quality, the number of features it has, just how many hours you can sink into gaming on your phone with this. Like, I love the original Gamester X2, and ever since I got a book style foldable, since first starting with the Galaxy Z Fold 5 and now the OnePlus Open, I've just been playing so much more games on my phone because I just did not find it comfortable to game on a regular candy bar phone that would just look like a Nintendo Switch. I have a Switch, right? But I'd never game in the handheld mode because I just didn't find it big enough. But with the book style foldable and with a controller that's basically made for foldables, I've been gaming so much more than I thought I would. And the best part is this thing only costs $45.99 on Amazon, which I think is a fair price considering the sheer number of things you get. The original Gamester X2 also costs $45.99, but the Gamester X2S adds those additional features like the Hall Effect triggers and joysticks. Compared to some competitors, it's missing some features like a built-in cooling fan, 3.5mm pass-through audio jack, and as you saw earlier in the video, a less buggy app because it can sometimes crash on this device. But I still think the controller itself with everything it offers is more than enough. Like, I didn't even use the app until I started reviewing it. Like, I didn't know it offered those extra features because I just found everything it offered by itself, just the ergonomics, perfectly fine. So you don't even have to use the app if you don't want to. But if you want to play games that don't support button inputs, then I highly recommend you check out the app. And if you want a game on your foldable, I highly recommend you do check out this controller for your foldable phone, or if you have a regular clamshell phone, for that device as well.
That's cool. Pretty rad. I love that it's styled. It's very Super Nintendo, right?
Yeah, Super Nintendo color.
Yeah, they say it's styled after the Nintendo 2DS. I guess so. I still like the, I like the retro-ish look, the color scheme of it. Like this, it does remind me of like that kind of era of gaming, like the Super Nintendo, I think, kind of had this color scheme, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, sure did.
Yes, indeed. And then the other one, of course, looked a lot like a Switch. But
I'm pretty sure I have my Super Nintendo must be at my parents'. I never got rid of it. I just sold my Xbox and Xbox 360s, but I kept my Nintendo 64. And
don't get rid of the 64.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. $46.
$46.
That's
available
a good
on
deal.
Amazon.
That's a very good deal for sure. So,
there you go,
Game Sir.
Great name. Yeah. Game Sir.
Thank you, Game Sir.
All right, cool. So we've covered pixels, we've covered foldables, we've covered gaming. What other categories are there in hardware? Oh, photography.
Yeah, that's the other thing that people get all geeked about when it comes to mobile. And Xiaomi is there to offer you something a little different for all of you photography nerds who like your smartphones and your cameras in the same device. The Xiaomi 14 Ultra has an add-on kit that you can add to the phone that essentially turns it into a true camera-looking device, as you can see here, complete with a detachable hand grip. So this hand grip actually comes off. It snaps onto the case. And, it really turns that sucker into a camera. It has a two-stage shutter, a zoom rocker. It has a customizable dial. It has a video button. The dial by default is assigned to exposure compensation, but that's customizable, so you can change that however you like. And the Xiaomi 14 Ultra photography kit is what you're looking at there. So if you'd like your phone to look, this is more like a camera that is also a phone when it's in this mode. That's what you got. But of course, we're in the US, so we can't buy these. Not easily.
Yeah, we're missing that stuff. I miss when, when there were all these cool, weird, gadgety forms of phones. And maybe one day that stuff will make its way to the States again. Because in the early days of Android, I mean, kind of tying into what Michelle was doing, you remember there was, what was it, like Sony had the I forget what it was called, kind of like a Game Boy phone sort of thing where it was form.
The Play.
Yeah, we used to have a lot of just weird stuff. There were phones with kickstands, with all sorts of attachments, and I feel like some of that modular. Would be good to have back.
Yeah, the modular, the LG modular phones, and the Motorola. Yeah, yeah. I've got a stack of Moto Mods over here with the Motorola with the camera. I remember the round camera on top of it that snapped in the back. Yeah. Well, I will say I was talking about this very phone with a friend of the show, also in the live chat, Mr. Burke. Who said that he would buy this in a heartbeat for the Pixel phone. And to your point, JR, I do think that domestically, like, it doesn't have to be modular, but it can cool little add-ons. It doesn't have to be Pixel. It could be Samsung. It could be OnePlus. There's a portion of the world that wants this sort of stuff, right? And so, it's cool.
It's never going to be the mainstream what everyone buys, but it's like a cool niche product that a certain subset of devoted whatever kind of geeks are going to get into. And that's kind of what has always made Android fun, that it can cater not just to the mainstream, but to specific groups and interests.
Unfortunately, if you talk to anybody with an MBA, niche product always equals low sales. So, but then you got to really wonder why Xiaomi would then go down this path and even offer it, right? Like, because clearly you got to you balance out what is the market going to determine and how much prospective sales we can get, and if the numbers work, then do it. Like, I'm with you. I want to see this stuff in the marketplace. So,
I guess in theory, maybe that's where somewhere like a OnePlus or a Nothing or one of the smaller companies where a small piece of the pie could mean a lot to them, perhaps would work out better. That being said, I mean, obviously this stuff on some level was tried. It didn't work. So maybe the business case just doesn't make sense. But from a user's perspective, it would be really awesome to see.
Yeah, indeed.
For sure. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for hardware. Let's get into some apps, some quick bites for you, some quick things to hit. I don't know, Jason, if we want to go with the full taps as of yet, because it's not truly dead. But Google Podcasts is on life support, if anything. As of this week...
sure, why not?
As of this week, it actually stops working. So no, if you use Google Podcasts as your main podcatcher, stop using it. We're gonna get that in a second. They are fully integrating podcasts into the YouTube Music app, and they've built a migration tool to allow you to migrate your data from Google Podcasts to YouTube Music, as well as, I believe, to export your data to go somewhere else if you wanted to. Google actually shared this in September, that quote, "This matches what listeners and podcasters are already doing. According to Edison, about 23% of weekly podcast users in the U.S. say YouTube is their most frequently used service versus just 4% for Google Podcasts," which I always thought was interesting that they went with outside Edison research versus their user data, which they would know how many users were using this or not. I do think the underlying motive is to condense their app offering to push YouTube Music as the main audio, you know, whether it's music or podcast or whatever app in the Google umbrella. But you know, a lot of people might wonder, like, well, what's the, you know, does Google Podcasts even matter or whatever? I did some of our own data, some of our own research, and with my other podcast, iFanboy, Google Podcasts represent 5% of the listening audience of that show. On Android Faithful, you would think Android, Google Podcasts, whatever. We actually had 8% of our listening audience using Google Podcasts, which means 8% of you listening right now need to move to Pocket Casts or to YouTube Music, right? Because we don't want to lose you as a listener.
Or to Podcast Addict or whatever. Yeah,
whatever CastBox, whatever you want to do. I do believe the podcast app of choice of the show is Pocket Casts, though. I have no shame in saying that. I love Pocket Casts. But interestingly enough, Google Podcasts at 8% of our listenership is in our top 10 of platforms, right? So it is a significant audience that I hope podcasts in general just don't lose by people not. I mean, I got to imagine people will move to something, but podcasts are going to take a hit with the death of Google Podcasts. So if you're listening to this on Google Podcasts, go listen, go get something else.
It's a shame to see Google dig itself deeper into this hole of distrust it's created around itself. I feel like for a while it was kind of a joke and an in-crowd geek Android person thing, but over the last few years, I hear more and more from just regular non-tech obsessed people. Like, why are they always changing things? Why does this shut down? Why doesn't this? I think people, even if on some level, even if not explicitly, you're starting to pick up and get annoyed by it. I know I hear it certainly from the tech savvy crowd, but even just from kind of like the lay people. And I didn't use Google Podcasts as much as I was tempted to try it, just because I was thinking, it's probably going to be gone in a couple of years. And we've seen that so many times. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, vicious cycle at a certain point.
Yeah, well, my problem with Google Podcasts always was that it just wasn't as feature-rich as I hoped it would be, right? And when it came out, we were super optimistic. We're like, excited. Wow, Google's going to really commit to podcasts. We're going to have search. They're going to search within the audio and stuff like that.
Audio, all these things that are totally possible that would have been really, you know, amazing.
And the interface never really did it for me, and in the way that Pocketcast does. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the UI was not great. And so, like, I don't think we're losing anything by not having Google Podcasts in the same way. Like I think if a product isn't working or people aren't using it, kill it, move on. I question whether YouTube Music is the best alternative. That's why I would suggest to go to Pocketcast. But, it is what it is. So another one bites the dust.
I think I mentioned this when Google announced the death of podcasts. I said that if at this point Google announces a new music, media, or video-related product that isn't part of the YouTube umbrella, don't hop on. Just wait for it. It's going to get killed off and then eventually folded under YouTube, as it should have been from the very beginning, as should have all of these things that eventually got killed and moved over to YouTube. It seems like that's been the trajectory for every single thing that initially started as Google something related to TV or movies, eventually got folded and put under YouTube.
Yep. Hmm. Yep. You're right. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So that's it for Google Podcasts. So what's going on with Google Maps, Michelle?
Well, specifically with Gemini. So the Gemini app/service, if you're using it on your device right now, if you were to ask it to navigate to somewhere, now it'll automatically start Google Maps navigation for you. So just a neat little quality of life update that started rolling out with a recent version of the Gemini service on Android. So if you updated the app recently on your Android phone, now you can start navigation directly from Gemini when you ask for directions to somewhere, someplace. And another integration that recently started rolling out is in the Google Messages app. If you have a Samsung or a Pixel phone, you can now chat directly with the Gemini chatbot through the Google Messages app, so long as you have RCS enabled. So you're sending your messages to Gemini, and it's responding directly in that RCS chat for you. And this only works one-on-one. You can't add Gemini to a group message, like an RCS, an encrypted messaging group, and then have it ask questions back and forth with multiple members, because, you know, it's, I think your messages aren't end-to-end encrypted when you're talking to Gemini through RCS. So that's one thing to keep in mind. You know, this is just for like a for fun thing. You want to ask it some questions while you're in the messages app. And it's just another way for Google to bring its chatbot in front of users instead of having them open the Gemini app or open a web browser and going to the Gemini website.
Yeah. Speaking of ghosts of the past, anyone else hearing echoes of Allo in the room? This is familiar. We've been down this road before.
Yes, indeed.
But it is nice to see Gemini getting closer to almost being capable of some of the things that Google Assistant could do. Maybe one day it'll get there. Like I said, I'm a little skeptical of it in these contexts. I feel like it's an interesting technology for certain purposes. I don't know that being a phone assistant is where its strengths lie. It feels kind of like we're stepping backward, and the things we're gaining in the assistant context might not be great for that context, but who knows? We'll see where we are in another 6 months, year. Yeah. It's obviously evolving rapidly, but it certainly feels like it got pushed out before it was ready for the masses.
Yeah. That's for sure.
It's going to take some time, I think.
Yeah.
To catch up, because when I hear, you know, like the automatically starting Google Maps navigation, like I can't remember if I told Assistant to navigate somewhere, if it automatically launched it, but like I think it probably did, right? Didn't it? Like, I don't know. Did I ever do that? And did it actually do that? It seems like a feature that Assistant probably did at some point, and then eventually they removed it, and now they're bringing it back. See, this is just how it goes. It's an endless cycle.
Endless loop. Right.
And it'll be in YouTube in a couple more weeks. So
yes, they're gonna fold Google Maps navigation into YouTube in a couple of weeks. You just wait and see. Chrome for Android is getting a new Android tab declutter feature. So if you are one of those people who lets those Chrome tabs build and build and build over time, apparently the feature called Android tab declutter is expected to arrive in Chrome 125, launch in May at some point. And this is all according to code spotted by Chrome Story. When enabled, the browser will automatically archive and delete tabs that aren't in use. So it does that for you, so you don't collect, you know, we've had times on the show where we've counted how many tabs we have open on our Chrome, and, you know, people in the audience have shared. And I mean, sometimes it gets up there. It's like 500. Yeah, I mean, 600.
This is the thing that makes me wonder who at Google listens to the show. Because it seems as if someone on the Chrome team was like, we can help them with that.
We can do something there. 9to5 Google says you should still be able to see the tabs you left open even after they've been archived. So that's a good thing. That was one thing that I was wondering. It's like, well, wait a minute. What if I don't want it to do that? And, you know, of course, this is a feature, so you could turn it off, I'm guessing, once it actually launches, and you don't want to do that. So, yeah, could be useful. I don't know. Are those on Android, on Chrome for Android, if I've got 100, you know, kind of tabs, they're not all occupying memory at that point, right? Like, I know on a browser, sometimes you have multiple tabs open depending on their state, you know, they are drawing or not drawing.
It seems like they go inactive because even with just like 15 open, when you swipe to one, is going to refresh basically.
Yeah, totally. Right. Yeah.
So. But yeah, you know you're in trouble, and this feature is for you. If you ever see that little, it's like the sideways smiley face, the colon D, which that just happened at like maybe when you hit 100. If you ever see that, this feature is probably for you. I'm guilty sometimes. So.
We've gotten several people who've sent in their tab counts, and it's been into the hundreds, which is crazy. So currently right now, I will check mine. I am at 4. So
that's impressive.
Yeah.
I'm at 13, which is pretty low for me.
All right, Jason, Michelle, what are you guys at?
Well, let me
just one.
Take me a second.
One, Michelle's just at one.
Ooh, wow!
Of course. Oh, I've got the side smiley face.
Oh, there it is. Jason's gonna win.
And so much so that it's not telling me how many is there. It's just side smiley face.
So
that means Jason, you have over 100.
That means you have over 100.
Okay. You got to count them up tonight. Yep. Get back to everybody.
Okay, there's my homework for this evening. Publish this podcast or count my Chrome tabs.
Publish the podcast, please.
Okay,
please.
All right, our
last few Google podcast listeners need it. So
apparently I need this feature.
Yeah.
So I'll activate it. Sure, why not?
Okay. Well, that's going to do it for the show. But first, we got some email from all of you, the listeners. You can email us at contact@androidfaithful.com and let us know what you think. We've had so many people following up on stuff that we talk about in the show. It's so delightful. It's hard to pick which emails get onto the show. But we got a couple of good ones here. So, Michelle, you got the first one. So why don't you take it away?
Well, technically, it's the second one, but you kind of skipped over the first one earlier in the show.
We pivoted, Michelle. We pivoted.
So our new first email of the week comes from Dan M., who writes in to tell us, "Hey team, I recently went for the OnePlus Watch 2 after seeing the initial reviews. It's my first watch." There we go.
There we go.
Oh, sorry. There we go.
The wrong one.
There we go. Nope. There we go.
There we go. There it is.
There we go. I love it, but the only thing I dislike is the sound quality using the watch versus my Pixel 6 Pro with my Pixel Buds Pro. There is no equalizer options. The sound is flat and so poor that I just don't use it. Is this an issue with all Wear OS watches? All the best. Love the show. So happy you came back to life after Twit. Thanks, Dan M. So, I don't know. Jason, you use the OnePlus Watch 2 as well, right?
Yeah.
Do you listen to music on it, like with your buds?
With my buds, no. Well, no, actually, I don't really sync my music to my watch. No, it's just not something that I normally do. So I couldn't really weigh in on this. I was trying I was trying to understand if it was through the speaker, but I see I missed the Pixel Buds aspect.
Well, yeah, you can't play music over the speaker. Yeah. Well, I do. I have paired my OnePlus Watch 2 with my Galaxy Buds 2 Pro that I'm wearing right now, and I do occasionally use it like when I'm jogging outside, but. You know, I haven't really paid attention to the sound quality. It hasn't really sounded bad to me, but like I'm listening it in outdoors. I'm not really caring that much about the quality of the audio, so it's not something I've particularly paid attention to. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there is a difference in quality between pairing it to your phone and listening through that versus pairing it to your watch and listening through that, because the Bluetooth chip on your phone is significantly more advanced and probably can focus more on audio quality versus focusing more on battery life. When you're pairing it to your watch, phone versus the watch. So
yeah, would it be
a different codec being used, right? Yeah. I don't know what codecs the OnePlus Watch 2 supports. It does have a Qualcomm Bluetooth chip and a Qualcomm chipset running on it.
Yeah.
It should support aptX. But I think the Pixel Buds Pro support aptX as well, but I don't know if it's using that codec particularly. Mm-hmm. So it could be a number of things. It's unfortunately kind of hard to diagnose what the exact problem is. And there's no equalizer app you can install on your watch to kind of fix it on your own.
It doesn't sound like it's a Wear OS problem necessarily. I mean, like when I got my Pixel 2 and I experimented with going running, I used it with the Nothing ear stick and I didn't notice any sound degradation issue. I was listening to podcasts. I wasn't listening to music. It wasn't totally, you know, high fidelity or not. And as we've all documented, my ears are not what they used to be. So maybe I didn't notice them. But not to say that Dan isn't noticing something different. I'd be curious. I don't know. You know, it's tough to say.
Dan mentions equalizer option. And I wonder, I mean, I don't know for certain, but I wonder if because I don't really use an equalizer option on my phone when, you know, with my Bluetooth earbuds, I just kind of take it flat and that's fine. I wonder if there are some users out there who are so reliant upon the equalizer and shaping the sound to be exactly what they want that when you get onto a device that doesn't have the option for an equalizer, it does flat. Sound different. It's not accentuated in the lows and the highs or whatever. It will sound flatter. And as a result, it's not going to sound as good. I don't know if that's the problem exactly here that Dan is talking about, but Dan does mention the equalizer. Maybe that's the difference. I don't know.
Sorry, Michelle. I was just going to say, I've got the Pixel Watch 2 as well. I don't make a habit of streaming music directly from the watch. It just doesn't come up, like Jason was saying, all that often. I know I've done it a few times, and I've never noticed anything either, but I've never really set out to test it. So now I'm curious. I'm going to have to try and see. Yeah. But no, it's never jumped out at me either with the Pixel, Pixel Watch 1 or 2, with both of which I've used.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know the Pixel Buds app has an equalizer feature, and I don't know if that's applying like an equalizer curve directly to the watch itself, or if that's, I'm sorry, to the buds itself, or if that's applying it on your phone, like for music that's being streamed. So yeah, if if Dan has like the equalizer set on their phone, and that's being applied to anything streamed, you know, to their buds, that could be why it sounds different when they're playing music from their Pixel 6 versus they're playing it from their OnePlus Watch 2.
Yeah. I kind of always assumed that those EQ curves happened through the transmission of the sound from the phone to the buds, and not that it was like hard coding some sort of EQ curve into the earbuds. But I actually don't know that for sure. That's just an assumption that I've made.
So, well, if you have a Wear OS watch and you've experienced you're linking up headphones or earbuds to the watch itself, and you've noticed similar to what Dan has, write in, let us know. We want to hear from you, the community. So,
yes, indeed. All right,
Jason, you got the next. This is a twofer. Follow up on last week's episode.
Dual emails. One from John from Minneapolis, who says last week Juan Bagnell was our guest last week, asked how to answer the phone without losing the navigation screen. One option is to use a headset and answer from the headset. Then the phone application doesn't come on screen. Another is to use Waze and select Keep Waze on Top in the settings. Two solutions.
Which is a good segue to the next email.
Eric, Roseville, Michigan, says, I'm sure you've received a bunch of responses to this, but just in case... here it is. Waze actually has an option to keep Waze on during phone calls. I've included a screenshot. If Juan doesn't use Waze and instead uses Google Maps, then supposedly the only reason his issue happens is supposed to be because background operations have been disabled for Google Maps. Not sure if that's his issue, but it could be. Thanks for the amazing show and have a wonderful week. Thank you.
And so he did provide, for those of us watching the video, on the left is the screenshot from Waze, where many people wrote in and told us that if you use Waze, there's Keep Waze on Top, and that's where you can keep it on there. But if you use Google Maps, the second screenshot explains how to keep Google Maps on screen during a phone call. You want to go to settings, select installed apps, select maps, select permissions, and then select allow background operations. And that will enable maps to stay on the screen during a phone call. So hopefully Juan is listening. I know he listens to the show. I'm also going to send him a note to tell him to listen to the show about this so he can find out about it. So.
Yeah, right on. Excellent. Yeah. Thanks for sending all those tips in, everybody.
Indeed. And then we got one more tip coming in. This email comes in from Mike Swanson, who says, hey guys, been enjoying your show since the days of All About Android. Thanks for the hard work. Mike says, I purchased a Pixel 7a shortly after it was released last year, and I've been very happy with it in all respects, except one. I found from the beginning that even with moderate use, I would not make it more than about 8 hours before the battery was at 20%. I reviewed the battery usage stats and no single app was at fault, so I searched the web for a solution. While many people had the same problem, no solutions were presented. It wasn't until about 3 months later that I found a string on Reddit that solved the issue. Reddit to the rescue again. He says it was simply a matter of powering it down and powering it back up. Apparently, the battery was never close to running out of juice, but rather the phone wasn't monitoring it correctly. Mm-hmm. After more than 7 months, the problem has never returned. Now I'm perfectly happy with my 7A. Thought this might be useful info for your listeners, as this info is hard to find online. Best regards, Mike Swanson. And I just thought this is a testament to the, have you tried turning it off and turning it on again?
So is Mike saying that for 3 months, he never turned it off and on?
That's what it sounds like.
That's impressive to me. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Or maybe most people, how's that even possible? Had an update?
I mean, that's a good point. Yeah, if you did, because the update update causes a restart. It doesn't call a power off, power on,
I think it does count. That should count in terms of like Android tracking battery stats.
But I don't think it does.
He's saying the problem is like the Android is, you know, wasn't properly tracking the battery stats, and a quick restart of the OS, which powered off and powered it back on, started. I don't know, but like,
I mean, going
either
back
way,
to
surprising
the,
to me that they never back to the day, once restarted back, their phone in like 3 months.
Going back to the days of Windows, you know, like the difference between Control Alt Delete and powering it off, letting it sit for 5 minutes, and powering it back on and getting a clean boot. You know, I think whenever something is weird going on my phone, I do a power down, I let it sit for a minute, and then I power it back up. And so, like, sometimes that just it cures all ails. But
it definitely does. That's just I'm kind of like impressed at that 3 months. Because I feel like I reboot my phone for so many random reasons multiple times a week, and I'm just kind of used to it at this point. I've done it for years.
I rebooted my phone earlier today. Actually, it's fun, not rebooted, but power, like hard power powered up, because actually, Michelle, the near drop on my Mac OS stopped working with QuickShare on my phone. Like, it was working, and now it stopped working, and I can't figure out why it stopped working. It doesn't see my phone anymore. So. That was nice while it lasted.
Did the power cycle do anything for you?
It did not. I was hopeful. I was hopeful that it would, but it did not. So I'm assuming that whatever is causing Circle to Search not to work is also affecting QuickShare.
You just need to wipe your phone and start fresh.
Oh my God, I don't want to have to reset.
I hear you. I totally get it.
I don't want to.
It's what you need to do, Ron.
And the thing is that, like, I know that it's better than ever to reset up a phone now. Like, I know that. The problem is
no, it's still such a huge pain. It's a huge pain for me.
And it's also the control freak in me. I have to back up my entire WhatsApp chat. I back up all my SMS messages. I do all this backup, all like the played and unplayed status on Pocket Cat. There's a whole bunch of stuff that exists on that phone. And I don't want to do it again. So,
yeah, I mean, the process is better. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, it's still a pain in the butt. It still takes me a couple of hours at least to set up a new phone.
And then you still find 3 days later, like, oops, I forgot to sign into this app.
Yeah, I'm not logged into whatever, those
some website that didn't keep you signed in.
Totally. But there are certain settings that transfer over that I don't have to think about going in there.
But some don't, too. Then you log in and it's wiped.
Totally.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Notification sounds. I just reset up a phone recently, and that was one that you always forget. Like, the custom notification sounds per app, those never carry over.
Yeah, right. Right.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in. Thank you, Mike, all the Mikes and Dans and Erics and Johns who wrote in. Email us at contact@androidfaithful.com. We'd love to hear from you. Bring on the emails. So.
Yes, indeed. Love the feedback. Love hearing from you all. Love having J.R. Rayfield on the show anytime show.
It's always a pleasure. Always a treat to see y'all.
Yeah, it's really great to have you here, man. Tell us, give us a little end of show plug for The Intelligence. Any last final thoughts that you want?
Yeah, come on over, join us, theintelligence.com. I write Android Intelligence every Friday. It goes out with 3 things to know, 3 things to try. There's also a Windows Intelligence newsletter, if that's your cup of tea. And then we do a Cool Tools newsletter every Wednesday with one off the beaten path cool tool, as it were, that you probably haven't heard of that'll work on any device you're using. So you can sign up for any or all of those at theintelligence.com. If you want to join us on the Insider front, one last time, is theintelligence.com/insider and use that coupon code ILOVERONRICHARDS. It'll knock $25 off. And again, if you are already an Android Faithful supporter, keep an eye out because you'll get an extra special code that will do even more for you. So yeah, we'd love to see everybody.
I did not have anything to do with that coupon code, but I love it.
He forced me.
You keep saying that.
Mm-hmm. We love you, JR. You're the best.
Yeah, you're the best. Thank you, JR. Michelle, what do you want to leave people with?
So, as you can tell, I write a lot about Android, especially Android 15 this year, and a lot of the new features that are being talked about in the media are things that I found from doing a lot of digging into the developer previews and beta builds. So if you want to find out first what's coming new in Android 15, you can follow me on Twix, Mastodon, Threads, Reddit, etc. at Michelle Rahman. And if you want to support the work that I do, you can go to patreon.com/MichelleRahman. Support me for minimum $3 a month. You can join my Discord group, which is where I share a lot of information. I share a lot more there now because I'm focusing more on article writing. So I don't have nearly as much time to post on social media as much, but I do post a lot on Discord. I even share sneak peeks of things that I'm working on. So if you want to see a sneak peek of the articles that I'm writing for tomorrow and the day after and next week and so on, you can go to Discord and you'll be able to see what's coming next in Android before I actually finish and publish my article on it.
Amazing. Get the inside scoop with Michelle Rahman. Thank you, Michelle. That's your tagline. You can go ahead and put that on the Patreon.
There it is. It's the t-shirt.
Super, super original. Thank you, Michelle. Ron, what about you?
Yes, you can follow me on social media. I'm at RonXO across all the various socials and all that stuff. Most active on Instagram because it's very easy. But also, I've got an app in the Google Play Store called Scorbit. If you're into pinball, I encourage you to check it out if you haven't downloaded it yet already. Leave a review if you like it. But yeah, it's a great it's an app that me and my friends put together to help you find places to play pinball, keep track of your scores, play your friends, all that fun stuff. We've got exciting stuff coming soon this year. So if you haven't checked it out, please do and go play pinball. It's a ton of fun. So, yeah.
Dude, pinball's rad.
It is.
Excellent. Thank you, Ron.
And Jason, what is going on in the world of yellow gold?
Oh, boy. just trying to stay on that treadmill and keep creating things.
You're doing great. You're doing great.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm learning a lot about what it takes to run a YouTube channel and grow a YouTube channel. Anyways, just go to yellowgoldstudios.com. That's where pretty much all of like my independent kind of content creation is hitting in one way, shape, or form. Yes, I have podcasts, but they also have video components, and they're hitting here as well. Or you can go to aiinside.show, which actually I should mention, I'm really happy with this week's episode. We had Sal Khan, who is the founder and CEO of Khan Academy, on this week's episode, and or last week's episode rather, and it was just really great to have Sal on. He's a brilliant man, and I love what he's doing with education. He's done a lot for the digital kind of classroom, and now he's talking a lot about kind of the future of the classroom with AI. So that's what we talked about, me and Jeff Jarvis, and it was a lot of fun. So check it out, aiinside.show. That's it. As for this here podcast, we do the show every Tuesday. All you have to do is go to androidfaithful.com, and you can find all the many ways to subscribe to Android Faithful. Yes, we do have a video component, which is on YouTube. But if you go to the Android Faithful site for each episode, you can find the audio version there. And then you can also find the video version kind of embedded into there. So that's kind of nice. And then, of course, as we've said a few times in today's episode, patreon.com/androidfaithful. If you want to support us directly, you do get special perks. You get sometimes, you know, we put up special videos just for you. But really, I think the big feature that a lot of people subscribe for is the fact that you get an ad-free recording of the podcast. So Android Faithful can be found at patreon.com/androidfaithful. Thank you so much for watching and listening to this episode of Android Faithful. We love doing this show every Tuesday, and we hope that we will continue to see you week after week. If you want to join us live, you can through YouTube as well, the DTNS channel. And yeah, we'll see you next time. Thank you again, JR, for being here. And thanks to you all for watching and listening. We'll see you next time on Android Faithful. Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.